Malachi chapter 3, page 962, and we're going to read from verse 13 through to chapter 4 and verse 3. You have said harsh things against me, says the Lord. Yet you ask, what have we said against you? You have said, it is futile to serve God. What did we gain by carrying out his requirements and going about like mourners before the Lord Almighty? But now we call the arrogant blessed. Certainly the evildoers prosper, and even those who challenge God escape. Then those who feared the Lord talked with each other, and the Lord listened and heard. A scroll of remembrance was written in his presence concerning those who feared the Lord and honored his name. They will be mine, says the Lord Almighty, in the day when I make up my treasured possession. I will spare them, just as in compassion a man spares his son who serves him. And you will again see the distinction between the righteous and the wicked, between those who serve God and those who do not. Surely the day is coming. It will burn like a furnace. All the arrogant and every evildoer will be stubble, and that day that is coming will set them on fire, says the Lord Almighty. Not a root or a branch will be left to them. But for you who revere my name, the Son of Righteousness will rise with healing in its wings, and you will go out and leap like calves released from the stall. Then you will trample down the wicked. They will be ashes under the soles of your feet on the day when I do these things, says the Lord Almighty. And I'd ask, please, that you keep this passage open. We're going to be looking at that just now. I wonder, have you ever opened up the newspaper or gone online onto a website and you've read someone saying Christianity is irrelevant? It is for people who are stuck in the past. Or you young people, I wonder, in school, has anyone ever said to you, surely you don't believe all of those stories that you read in the Bible? You're wasting your time by going to church and to Sunday school. Wonder, have you ever faced that? This passage tells us this morning that there is nothing new in any of that. It tells us that people have always said that following God is futile. This is a book, it's written to Israel. Israel are supposed to be God's special people. They are supposed to be holy, and yet they're not. You have men who walk out in their wives for no reason. People who lie, who steal, and who trample the weak. And it gets worse, because religion in Malachi's day is a farce. The priests, who are supposed to be leading the worship and doing the sacrifices, they can't be bothered. The sacrifices and the worship are a complete shambles. And worst of all is the sheer arrogance of the people. These people are so hardened in their sins that they have the brass neck to blame God for all of the problems. They say to each other, "What has God ever done for us?" They say, "God has changed. So what's the point in keeping all of these rules?" And if Malachi's generation was to have a motto, it would be verse 14 of chapter 3. "It is futile to serve God." It is futile to serve God. And isn't that exactly the message that we are told today? It is futile to serve God. And sometimes, if we're totally honest, doesn't it seem like the people who say this maybe have a point? Now we see, for example, verse 15. We see evildoers prospering. And then we look at good people, and what do we see? Life is a struggle. We see people, again in verse 15, they challenge God, they even mock God, and absolutely nothing seems to happen. And sometimes, can't we think, would it not be easier if I simply packed it all in? If I just stopped living as a Christian, I wouldn't have to listen to those dismissive comments. I wouldn't have to worry about those strains on my friendships or in my family. I wouldn't have to struggle against sin because I could do whatever I want. Would it not be easier if I simply stopped? This morning, we're going to look at a question. The question simply, is it futile to serve God? Because the people of Malachi's day and the people today in Ireland say yes. But God, in verses 16 to verse 18, says no. And he turns to a group of people, a small group, who are swimming against the tide, and he offers encouragement. And I wonder this morning, for some of you, is encouragement exactly the thing that you need? Maybe you're feeling worn down. Maybe the world's carefree approach to life seems very appealing. Maybe in your very darkest moments you have wondered, is it futile to serve God? So this morning we're going to look at three incentives to keep on going. First one, serve God because God remembers his people. Serve God because God remembers his people. The man in the street in Israel has been talking. He has been slandering God. He has been questioning God's faithfulness. But we see in verse 16, there are others who also speak. Then, those who feared the Lord talked with each other. And the Lord listened and heard. We still have people in Israel who fear God. They meet together and they remember God's goodness. They love God even though everybody else has turned away. And they're given encouragement in these verses. We're told the Lord listened and heard. Those words that they have spoken in secret don't go unnoticed. These people, they may be small in number, they may not hold positions of honour or of importance. And yet, God hears. And as we think about that, isn't that something that is so, so encouraging? Think of those comforting words that you have maybe had for someone who's struggling, maybe after the service, and nobody else has heard them. We're told here, God listens. Think of that email, maybe that you've sent to a missionary, or that text message that you've sent to someone to encourage them, and nobody else knows that you've sent it. But we're told here, God hears. And Malachi, he uses a lovely picture to reinforce the point. Again, in verse 16, a scroll or a book of remembrance was written in his presence concerning those who feared the Lord and honored his name. I wonder, do any of you, I'm thinking especially of the ladies, have a scrapbook? Have you kept hold of photos, maybe of you and your siblings, whenever you were young? Or have you kept hold of the letters that your husband sent you before you were married? If you do have a book like that, well then, it's special. Because it reminds you of the things that you hold dear. You're never going to forget those moments with your family. You're never going to forget those words from your spouse, because they're stuck inside your book. Well, could we say, on the basis of verse 16, that God has a scrapbook of precious memories? A place where he records the things that are close to his heart. And in this book are the names of those who fear him and who honour his name. Which means that even as God looks at the nation, all the rest of the people, even as he sees how wicked they are, he remembers. He remembers that older member who is so committed to the church. He remembers that mighty man or woman of prayer who achieves so much when they're on their knees. He remembers that couple who open up their home for hospitality. He remembers that office worker who guards her lips as she goes to work. He remembers that stay-at-home mum who models Christ-likeness for her children. He remembers that young person who plucks up their courage and talks to her friends at school. He remembers that believer who suffers and yet has the faith not to grumble. God remembers and he hears. So the first part of our answer, is it vain or is it futile to serve God? No, because God remembers his people. Then our second encouragement, serve God because God treasures his people. Serve God because God treasures his people. And we've got another lovely picture in verse 17. They will be mine, says the Lord Almighty, in the day when I make up my treasured possession. The word used here can also mean jewels. It can mean something really, really precious. something that you value above everything else, something that captivates you with its beauty. And this verse tells us, when the time comes for God to gather his treasure, whenever he brings together this priceless possession, it's not gold or silver, it's not rubies or diamonds, it's not even the angels, but it's those people like us who revere his name. People like us who are ignored by the world. People who haven't prospered like the wicked. These are the people of God's treasured possession. The world looks at us and it says, they're out of touch. They're backward. But God says, they're mine. They are my treasured possession. Isn't that incredible? Isn't that something that should make us want to worship? It may be that you never know the esteem or the praise of the world. It may be that you never get to enjoy the trappings of success. And yet, this verse tells us, if you fear God, then you are precious to the Lord of all the earth. Some of you ladies, I'm guessing that one of your most treasured possessions is your engagement ring. You're, presumably, at least you're careful whenever you take it off. I'm assuming that you don't just take it off, throw it into a drawer somewhere, and then forget where you put it, because it's precious. And I would imagine that if this ring was to get slightly damaged, well, you wouldn't even think about simply throwing it out, because it's precious. Well, surely, if you ladies can take such good care of something like an engagement ring, how much more must God care for his treasured possession? Will God simply allow his precious ones to be snatched away? Will God even contemplate throwing us out whenever he realizes how sinful we are, or when he sees our imperfections? Of course not. If we serve God, then we're safe, because we are his treasured possession. So the question we're looking at this morning, is it futile to serve God? No, because God treasures his people. Then our third and our final encouragement, serve God because God spares his people. Serve God because God spares his people. And Malachi really begins to ramp things up. He tells us, verse 17, second half of the verse, I will spare them just as in compassion a man spares his son who serves him. You men who are fathers, if you were to wake up in the middle of the night and discover a fire in your home, I don't think for one minute you're going to go looking for a scrapbook. And I don't think you're going to go and gather up your wife's jewellery. Your first thought will be to jump up, to go into your children's bedroom, and to try to get them out. Because children are far, far more valuable than books or treasures. And God is saying here to these people who have stayed faithful, you're more than just names in a book. You're more than jewels and gold. You're like my sons, and I will spare you as sons. Maybe we could imagine a farmer. This farmer has one son. Before the boy's even able to walk, he rides with his dad in the front of the tractor. Whenever he's a young boy, he goes with his dad and he helps to round up the cows. Whenever he's older, he milks, he cleans the parlour, he goes to the mart. And on those occasions, when it's 3 a.m. and the vet needs to be called, who is it that's there with the father? It's the son. Can you imagine the bond that there must be between that father and his son? He loves the boy, but not just as a son. He loves him as a son who has served, a son who has confirmed and who has proved his faithfulness to the father. And God says here, I will spare them just as in compassion a man spares his son who serves him. Which means, if you're a Christian, whether you have been one for decades or for days, whether you have demonstrated your loyalty to the Father or whether you're just starting out, whether you have served well or whether you have stumbled again and again, if you're a Christian, whether you're a man or a woman or a boy or a girl, God tells us here, you're a son. And what makes it even more amazing is this. None of us are sons by birth. All of us, by nature, are enemies of God. But we have been brought into God's family. We have been given the blessings of a son who serves. And really, there is only one reason why we're able to say this. If we were to turn over just a few pages into Matthew's Gospel, I'm not thinking of a particular reference, but who do we immediately see? It's God's very own firstborn son. A son who served Jesus. A son who followed his father's every instruction. Who obeyed all of the way to the cross. And the reason why Jesus came to earth and became a man, because by nature, none of us are sons. Because what we deserve is to have our names blotted out. Because by nature, we are to be despised rather than treasured by God. Jesus came to earth because if we were to be brought into the family, a price had to be paid. And the really incredible bit, just thinking about the words of verse 17, when the time came to pay the price, what did the father do? He looked at Jesus, this son who had served him so faithfully, and he didn't spare his son. He sent his firstborn, his faithful son, to a Roman cross so that he could spare sinful sons, people like you and like me. He handed over his one sinless son. And I wonder this morning, have some of you grown cold whenever it comes to worship? Do you take the fact that God is love for granted, and you forget just how amazing it is and just how much of a price had to be paid? I wonder, for some of us, is the message of Malachi that we should seek God and we should worship? Maybe for others, what you need after reading this passage is to rededicate yourself. Maybe you have grown sloppy. Maybe what you need to do is to realize that you're a son and to resolve that you're going to serve with the love and the fervor of a son who serves his father. Maybe for others, what you need is to be like the believers of Malachi's day. I think it's something we're very good at in this fellowship, resolving that we will speak, maybe after the service, all about God's goodness. Because we see this goodness so clearly in this passage. We're more than just names in a book. We're more than treasure. We are sons. So our question, is it futile to serve God? No, because God spares his people. And these verses, as if they needed it, take on added force when we see verse 18. Because the people, remember, of Malachi's day, they have been accusing God of doing nothing. They have said God simply sits back and he doesn't care. But they're wrong. Because according to chapter 4 and verse 1, when the time is right, God is going to act. And verse 18 tells us, when God acts in Malachi's day, there are two groups of people, just as there are two groups of people in our day. One group says, it is futile to serve God. You're wasting your time. And so they don't. They serve themselves, and very often in this life, they prosper. But the second group stands firm. And God is saying here, on the day when he acts, the world is going to see so, so clearly the distinction between the righteous and the wicked, between those who serve God and those who don't. And we're told, chapter 4 and verse 1, on that day, God's wrath will burn like an oven, and the arrogant will be consumed like stubble. But, as we've seen in verses 16 to 18, on that day, God will open up his book, and he'll remember. On that day, God will gather his treasured possession, people like us, and he will take us into the safety of the storeroom of heaven. On that day, God will spare his beloved sons and daughters. Let me just say, if you're not a believer, That will be a day that is full of agonizing regret. You will weep as you say, if only I had served the Lord. But if you are a Christian, it will be a day of sweet, wonderful vindication. Yes, we face trouble in this life. We face opposition. We are sometimes despised by others. But on that day, you will be able to say with more certainty than ever before, on the day when Jesus comes back, I have feared the Lord. I have esteemed his name. And it was completely and totally worth it. Let us all live with one eye on this day. Let us keep on going whenever life is a struggle. Let us remember on the day when Christ returns, everything we suffer for his name is completely and totally worth it.